This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
In Israel today, you can still find some people who live much as the people of that area lived centuries ago. They're called Bedouin. They have a nomadic lifestyle. That lifestyle is vanishing rather rapidly, but there's still things that can be learned from studying the Bedouin, living among them. And our guest on today's program has a book called The Seasons of Tulul, which is about living the Bedouin lifestyle. He is Egon Lass, an archaeologist who we have talked with recently concerning the excavations at what's known as the Cave of John the Baptist. And today we're going to be talking about the Bedouin. The first thing that I am interested in finding out is how many people are there who are still living this lifestyle?
Well, I wouldn't know, but I think they are rapidly vanishing. The various governments are trying to pull them out of their tents into settlements. That way they can control them better. They know where they are. And so whatever Bedouin are left are rapidly vanishing, and I haven't the foggiest idea how many there are.
I know in my experiences traveling through Israel, it's always intriguing to drive by some of these tents and see TV antennas and other modern amenities. They're in a transitional phase, it seems like. Tell us how this book came about.
This book was written in the 1970s when I was field archaeologist at Tulul Abu al-Alaik, which is Herodian Jericho. We were excavating Herod the Great's palaces near Jericho in the Dead Sea Basin. My very closest friend, probably the closest friend I've ever had, was Ali Abu Faiz. He was the Bedouin who had pitched his tent in the middle of the site. The director of these excavations was Ehud Netzer. He would drop me every Sunday. Sunday in Israel is a working day. He would drop me every Sunday morning, and then he would come and pick me up on Friday afternoon. And during the week, I would live with my friend Ali and would direct the excavations. And from 1 o'clock down to 9 o'clock in the evening, I would be with Ali and I would talk with him and do things with him and experience what a Bedouin does, what Bedouin life is like.
Were there other Bedouins in this area? I don't remember seeing many tents in this particular area.
The Bedouin that we were working with several tribes. We were working with the Ka'abna, the Rashide. The Rashide lived in the mountains, the Jehalin, and the Abid. The Abid were black Bedouin. So there were four tribes that we were working with. And Ali, who was member of none of these tribes, was our liaison with all of these tribes. He was of the Dhulam. These were in the Negev, but he had been separated in 1948 from his tribe. He was rather all by himself. He did not have tribal support, so it made him a very unique character.
Well, just to the south of Jericho is Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, and the Bedouin have a significant role in that story.
Yes, those are the, what were they called? Ta'amri, yeah, that was the Ta'amri tribe. They are known as archaeological hunters, and they are held in contempt by all of the tribes that I worked with.
Why?
Because they were from a different region, and they spoke differently, and whenever Ta'amri passed by and they spoke to us in their language, in their Arabic, their kind of Arabic, then all of our Bedouin would laugh at them. You know, in Israel, every village has its own language and every tribe has its own language. So, you know, there's a lot of ethnocentrism going on.
Well, in your book, The Seasons of Tulul, is it mostly about Bedouin and partly about archaeology or all Bedouin?
This is basically a journal. There's no theory here. There's nothing here theoretical about anthropology. There's a straight description. usually of conversations that I had with the Bedouin, and also descriptions of various things. There was a lot of feuding going on, so the feud plays a part. Family relationships, which got very interesting sometimes, a bit too interesting. Violence, inheritance, friendships such as I had never known. I have never known people in the West who were willing to die for me at a moment's notice. And I have known many Bedouin who were willing to do that. So this was a very strange and very exotic experience for me. I can give you an example of how Bedouin differ from us in basic ways that are genetic, practically genetic. For instance, Ali and I are walking through a banana field, and Ali suddenly stops and begins sniffing like a dog. And I said, "What are you doing?" in Arabic. And he said, "I smell bananas." And I said, "Congratulations, we're walking through a banana field and you smell bananas." By the way, I didn't smell anything. I smelled nothing. And he said, "No, it is not the banana on the tree that I smell. Not the green banana. It is the ripe banana that I smell." And I thought that he was really putting it on. He follows the scent like a dog. He walks over to a little bush. He bends down and picks out a ripe bunch of bananas. And we sat down and ate all of them. Another example. We're excavating, and I'm looking up into the mountains. These mountains are miles away from us, and I see some dots moving in the mountains. I don't know what these dots are, whether they are donkeys, whether they are men, whether there's a flock of goats. I have no idea. And I turn to Ali and I ask him, "What is that up there?" And he says, "The first one is Ali Muhammad. The third one is his brother, Suleiman. The middle one, I've never seen him before in my life." And an hour later, three people come riding by on their donkeys in exactly that way. I have to say that this is an adaptation. This is such an important adaptation for life in the desert that if you don't have the nose, if you don't have the eye, the smell, the hearing, that is just extraordinary, you are selected out. You die. It is a matter of life and death to have these things. And that's why, genetically speaking, they're different from us. Because, I mean, he proved it to me over and over again.
If you've just joined us, our guest on today's program is Egon Lass, the author of a book called The Seasons of Tallul, about living among the Bedouin during the excavation of Herod's Jericho. I can remember reading not too long ago an article in a magazine about Arab trackers who could recognize someone by their footprint in the sand. And just by seeing a footprint could describe someone they'd never seen before. And that gave me a whole new perspective on this culture that I knew very little about.
Yes, I used to read Fenimore Cooper and read about Indians who could walk through the forest without making a sound and see further and, you know, just exactly like the Bedouin. And I did actually think later on that this was a romanticization until I met the Bedouin. And I know now that it probably was not romanticized, that these were probably actual descriptions of people who live in nature, who must have these traits in order to survive. I have never met a Bedouin tracker, but I know that the Israeli army uses them. So actually, to this day, there are Bedouin who are like that, but I don't know any of those.
Had you known the Bedouin before this excavation?
I had worked with Arabs in Jerusalem, urban Arabs. I had worked with Fellahin, village Fellahin. I have worked with the Golan Druze. I had never worked with Bedouin, and actually the prospect of working with Bedouin seemed melancholy to me at first, because Many of the urban Arabs are rather degenerated. They are lazy and often treacherous. I'm sorry to say, it's just a fact. I have wide experience, and I didn't like working with them. I had not met the pure Bedouin of the desert. They are the best workers that I've ever had, without doubt. And by the way, this may be a little off the track. I learned a lot among the Bedouin, which feeds right into all of the trouble that we have right now in the United States. I believe that in the 21st century, one of the great challenges for the Western world is going to be dealing with Islam. That is going to be the great challenge of the 21st century. I don't know a lot, but I probably know more than most American citizens. And I think it's catastrophic how little we know about how to deal with these people. Like, for instance, we are now deeply involved in several Islamic societies, and I don't think that there's an American in the bunch that I've ever seen who knows how to make treaties. Does anybody know how to make treaties with these people? You're going to think me totally crazy if I say this, but there's one element that is more important than anyone realizes, and that's coffee. Coffee is drunk in a ritual manner. When you visit someone's house, for instance, and they offer you coffee, you accept it and you drink it with them, and it is a very ritual act. And when you have drunken coffee with a Bedouin or with an Arab, generally speaking, it means that the slate between you is clean, that everything that he owns is yours and everything you own is his, and that if you have just made an agreement with him and you break that agreement, then you have heaped dishonor upon your head, and dishonor is worse than death. And that if you ever make a treaty with an Arab, or if you ever even talk to an Arab, coffee should be involved. Does any American know this? Does any politician in America know this? Now, I've never been in Iraq and I've never been in Afghanistan, but I don't know. Maybe other rules obtain there, but are we at all aware of them?
I can imagine there are some soldiers who have learned that by firsthand experience and working with the local population, certainly.
Yes. Have they told their politicians about this state of affairs?
Yeah. This interview with Egon Lass goes back to 2006, and today, like then, the Middle East still dominates the news of the day. It appears his book, The Seasons of Talul, about his life among the Bedouin, is still available as a Kindle edition on Amazon. We have a link at radioscribe.com. There you'll find other resources, including breaking news videos on biblical archaeology from the Israel Antiquities Authority and information on our biblical archaeology news magazine, Artifacts, at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Thanks for tuning in. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.